We're on Lamed Tesom and Beis, and we were about to start the machlokus between Abai and Rav. That's where I think we left off. And the issue at stake here is who has veto power to block the marriage after an ones or a mafat or pitu situation. In the Brice itself, it says that in both ones and mafata, the veto is given to both the Nara herself and her father. And that's called Bein Hi U Bein Avir Yecholim Li Akev. And the Gemara says the following. In the case of Mefuta, there's an explicit pasuk that indicates that the father has veto power. It says, Im Ma'en Yema'en Avir. However, in the case of Ones, there is no such pasuk. On the contrary, the Torah says, "V'lo siyah li'isha," and therefore we might think that since the Torah commands the ones to marry the anusa, and the Torah doesn't give him any opportunity, any chance to veto the marriage, then the father likewise is removed from his normal rights of veto. And in the case of the Isha herself, the Gemara derives, the Brice actually derives from a pasuk that she has rights to veto, because it says, Lo siya li Isha, and siya is midaita. So now Abai and Rav are going to have machlokas here about what's the basis for this halachic principle, this conclusion, that even in the case of ones, the father has rights to veto the marriage. So we're going to start here with Omar Abaye. Let's see if we can find the place. So we have here in the way the Tzuras Hadaf in the classic Gemaras is there's the skinny lines that go up and down, and then there's the wide lines on the bottom. And Abaye is the very beginning of the wider lines on the bottom. It's the first of the wide lines. Anyway, Omar Abaye. Abaye says that the veto power of the father in the case of ones is derived from a logical principle. And that principle is Shelo Yehi Chote Niskar. Imagine, had he not raped this woman, then since she's a Nara, the only way he could marry her is with the full approval of the father. Now what? As a result of the ones, we're going to give him a reward, and we're going to allow him to marry her against the will of the father. That doesn't make any sense. That's a violation of the principle of Shelo Yehi Chote Niskar. Rava says, no, I need a more solid derivation. And we'll soon see why Rava doesn't rely on Abai's logic. Kal v'chomer. We have to introduce a kal v'chomer in order to derive the conclusion that the father could veto the marriage. Uma mefate. In the case of mefate, the Torah says explicitly that the father could veto the marriage. Shelo avar. El Aldas Avir Bilvad, he's a lower, relatively speaking, the Mafat is a lesser violator. You know, if you have to give, you know, if you put violators and Averis, Avaryonim on a scale of 1 to 10, the case of Mafat only reaches 5. Why? Because at least in the case of Pitu, he got one agreement, you know, to one consent, and that's the consent of the Nara. So lo avar el al das avia bilvad. So it was only undermined the father's das, the father's approval. And yet, even though it's relative to ones, it's a lowercase avera. Nevertheless, bein hi ubein avia yechom liakev. The Torah gives both the Nara herself and her father rights to block this marriage is ones, which is a much more severe avera, shover al das avia vial das atzma. It's not only did he undermine the father's approval, but he also violated her approval. Is lo kolshkin much more so? Should the father have the rights to be ma'akev? The Torah is not going to remove the father's rights in the case of ones, if the Torah guaranteed those rights in the case of Mefata. Because in the case of Mefata, where there's less than an avera, insofar as she consented, and yet the Torah still maintains the rights of the father to be ma'akev, then how much more so in the case of ones, which is a complete undermining of anybody's das. It's an absolute avera. There's no consenting adult over here. Neither she nor the father consented. So the avarion here is on the first level, and certainly the father, who in the case of a fata was granted the rights to be ma'akiv, and certainly in the case of ones, he's granted the rights to be ma'fata. And now the Gemara analyzes, why is it that Abaye rejected Rava and Rava rejected Abaye? Rava lo amar ke Abaye. Rava says that the principle of shelo yeichote niskar only applies when the overall picture we're giving someone who is a chote a reward. Because if you reward sinners, that's going to certainly intensify their desire and their and the gravitational pull to violate an avera. If you the more you gain as a result of sin, sin pays off, the more you're motivated to violate a sin. But Rava says in this case of ones, if you look at the overall picture, forgetting about for the possible benefit of taking the father out of the picture, the father is going to forfeit and be removed from his rights to block the marriage. Forget about that. Rava doesn't deny that. That is a very attractive benefit of ones. But when you look at the overall picture, would he be motivated to do this ones? The Torah has a built-in inhibition that would inhibit the ma'anis from it. In this case, you wouldn't say crime pays off. Came to come to kamishalim knas. I mean, at the end of the day, he's going to have to pay a very heavy, stiff penalty. Is lav chote niskar? You can't say that crime pays in this case. That we've established an attractive motivation and a reward for the chote because the father's out of the picture. Now he can marry against the will of the father. No. In the overall picture, says Rava, that's not a chote niskar. That doesn't put the pluses of chet above the minuses. This balance sheet between the pros and the cons, the assets and the deficits, it's certainly more beneficial for the chote in this case to desist from sin, knowing full well that the punishment that's going to be over his head over here is such a severe punishment that he has to pay a stiff knas. Is that's not called a chote niskar? So it would seem at this point that machlokas Abaye v'Rava is how to understand chote niskar. Abaye says any reward that you would give to a chote, whatever it is, even if it's lower on the totem pole of assets and deficits, even if that benefit would not outweigh the deficits, because getting the father out of the picture is not enough to make this action of onus attractive when he has to pay the but Abaye sees lo yechote niskar as an absolute halacha, that there's no niskar, there's no schar that the halacha would bestow upon a chote. That's just an absolute rule. A chote has to be punished. You can't say that he gained something through his chet. I was wondering how Abaye would understand kinyanik zela. Kinyanik zela is a case where a man makes a kinyan on an object, and how did he acquire it? Through zela. That's a chote niskar. So Rava might say, well, the overall punishments that he'll have, that outweighs the benefit of making acquisition. But from a Abaye's perspective, if there's an absolute rule of lo yechote niskar, that there can't be any schar whatsoever, no gains when a person takes over and violates the law, how is he going to explain kinyan gzeila? And there may be other questions to be asked on Abaye. But Abaye, in this case, understood that this is an irritation. This violates the principle of lo yechote niskar, because now he can marry her. Now again, it could be that Abaye is saying something else. That may Abaye's machlokas with Rav is on a motivational level. It's more of a psychological machlokas. I mean, I try to avoid that. The Rav taught us, not to get in too heavy into psychology and philosophy when we learn halacha. But on a psychological level, maybe Abaye is saying that if this man tremendously desires this relationship with this woman, and the big ma'akif here is the father, so he might be tempted to do the onus, even if it's going to cost him in his pocketbook. Even if he's going to have to pay a very heavy penalty, it's worth it for him, because there's no way he can get the father's agreement unless he takes the law into his own hands and violates this Avera of Onus. So that's as far as Rav and Abai is concerned on one end of the spectrum, meaning why Rav was not eager to apply the principle of Chot Lo Yehi Chote Niska. But now we have to ask the flip side. Abaye lo amaka Rava, what's wrong with the Kal V'chomer of Rava? How would Abaye differentiate between Mafata, where the father has rights to block the marriage, and yet logically in the case of Ones, which is a more severe Avera than Mafata, because overall fil al das atzma, and yet according to Abaye's logic, no, in the case of Ones, the father might be out of the picture. And here's where we're going to put the emphasis on the mitzvah v'losia l'isha. So Abai lo omer k'rava, he says the following, mefata de'iu motzi me'akev, avia nami motzi me'akev. In other words, this marriage, in the case of mefata, is totally optional. No one is forcing anyone, the Torah is not requiring anyone to, in the aftermath of a pitui, to marry anybody. And therefore it makes sense that if the Torah doesn't have any vested interest here in marriage, in the aftermath of pitui, then the Torah would be very much in favor of blockage. I mean, even the Mefata himself has veto power. He can decide he doesn't want to marry her, even if both she and her father would agree to marry. And therefore, avia nami motzi me'akev, there's no reason to undermine the father's rights over his daughter who's a nara, to block her marriage. He's in charge of her marriage, and PT doesn't change the situation. But why would Ones change the situation? Is the answer is because Ones, the iu lo motzi me'akev, is avia nami lo motzi me'akev. In the case of Ones, there is a mitzvah, and we've enforced the law here. We compel the Ones to marry this woman, whether he likes it or not. So you see clearly the Torah is in favor and requires this marriage. We want to limit the blockage, any blockages, any veto powers as much as we can. Again, we can't leave the Anara out of the picture. You know, she's the Balas Dover here, and the Torah says Lo siya le'isha, and siya means midaita. But as far as the father is concerned, to the same extent that the Ma'anes himself was removed from Das, we don't need his approval. The Torah forces him to marry this woman. So too in the case of Aviyah, he doesn't have the rights to interfere with this marriage, to interfere with the Ratzon HaTorah and the Chiyuv Mitzvah that's incumbent upon the Ones. And therefore Abai rejects the Kal V'chomer of Rava, because the whole Kal V'chomer is based on an equation between Mefata and Ones, but there's a fundamental difference between the two. Whereas in Mefata, the Torah did not obligate marriage. The Torah in Ones obligated marriage. Maybe the father has no right to block the fulfillment of that mitzvah, if that's the will of God. And at this point, the Gemara wants to bring a brisa in the case of Ones to discuss a whole different issue. You know, we're really now at a fork, at a fork in the road. The Gemara wants to know that in the case where he's paying the knas, is that a replacement for ksuba? Now, ksuba is paid in two situations. Number one, if he divorces his wife. Number two, if he dies. And then, of course, the ksuba is collectible from the yorshim. Is Tanya Idach? We have another brisa. Afal pisha omru ones nosein miyad. Even though the Torah is very makpid, very careful and very insistent that the Ones pay the knas, that's only as far as the knas is concerned. Now he marries her, and he's already paid the knas, he marries her and he wants to divorce her. Now this makes no sense, as the Gemara is going to point out. What do you mean he wants to divorce? He's not allowed to divorce her. So the Torah says Alav lo yuchal l'shalchu kol yomo. But in any event, the Brisa says, "Ein lo alav klum," she cannot collect the ksuba. In other words, the payment of the knas itself is going to be, once she accepts it, once she receives it, is going to be a replacement for the ksuba. So that's called, in the language of the Mefarshim, that's called kesef knasa tachas ksubasa. That the normal takon of ksuba is replaced in the case of knas. That knas replaces the ksuba. The Gemara is going to investigate and analyze this principle of knas tachas ksubasa in just a few minutes. For first of all, the Gemara says, I object to the language of the Braisa. What do you mean kshiyotze? Mi matzi mapikla. The Torah says lo yuchal shalcha kol yoma. Ema, we have to sort of reinterpret the Braisa. Kishetetze hi. If she initiates the divorce proceedings, she has rights to say, I demand a divorce. And under those circumstances, if he gives her a divorce, ein la olav klum, she has no rights to the ksuva. And here again, it's a radical chiddush, but at least we can read the Braisa. The Braisa saying, kishiyotzi, if she initiates the divorce, then ein la olav klum, she cannot force him to pay the ksuva, which normally the Chacham instituted that when you divorce a wife, you have to pay.
She has the right to demand a divorce.
And it seems like she has rights to demand a divorce. Now, in halacha, normally, we have full simanim in Shulchan Aruch and Eben Ezer to establish under what circumstance a woman could demand a divorce. Because, very often we think that the reason why she wants a divorce is maybe she fell in love with another man. We're very chosh shem anasen eidem v'achem. But here in this case of Ones, the impression that you get is, again, we have to go through the Shittim Gubetz on this sugya, but it would seem that the Torah recognizes her right to demand the divorce, because although she was willing to give it a try, but and she didn't exercise her veto power, but nevertheless now she sees it's not a go, and he has to divorce her. But on the other hand, he doesn't pay the ksuba. Why? Because he's already paid the knas. Now, we're going back to the Braisa for a moment. The Braisa says v'chein, I mean, it doesn't say the word v'chein, but meis, just like in the case where the ma'anes divorces her, then if he dies, and here's that phrase that we mentioned before, yatza kesef knasa v'ksubasa, that the kesef of the knas is a replacement for the ksuba. Now, the Rishonim asked the following question. Why did the Braisa change its language? In the Reisha, it just says, Ein la olav klum. That's in the case where he divorces her. In the Sefer, we get to the case of Meis, it says, the language of the Braisa is, Yatza kesef knasa b'ksubasa. Why didn't you just repeat the same language? Ein la olav klum. So I was thinking the following, and it's just my own thought, that the Braisa wants to establish that if we're only dealing with the case of Gerushin, so then he would have the right to say to her, look, why do I have to pay you the ksuba? I've already given you the knas. But in the case of Meis, he doesn't have such a taina, right? He's not making a decision to divorce her, such that he can say, well, I already paid you the knas. Here it's a pure halachic question as to fundamentally whether the Rabbanan created a chiv ksuba in the case of a man who pays knas. What do I mean? The whole purpose of the takon of ksuba is to inhibit a person from divorcing his wife by making him realize that if he goes through with a get, sometimes a man gets very angry at his wife for whatever reason. He throws her a get, and imagine if he's a kohen. I mean, that's irreversible. So we want to slow down this process and inhibit him from giving a get. So they instituted a ksuba. Now they went one step further, and they instituted the ksuba in the case of mes. Now, it could be that in the case of gerushin, we might accept a certain kind of a logic that we've already built into this marriage an encouragement for the marriage. Again, it's a little bit difficult to say that because now he's already married, he's already paid up the knas, but in any event, the marriage itself has a payment to it. But in the case of Meis, there, the Chachamim made a takana that's not based on inhibiting him from going ahead and ending this marriage. I mean, we're not talking about a situation which he could bring upon himself or terminate the marriage. He died. That's it. So the Rabbanan made a takana, and they said that, you know what, a woman has inherent rights to a ksuba. So you're going to tell me, well, he already paid a knas. You know, he's already, so to speak, given her money within the framework of this relationship. Yeah, but that's not enough. Because the Rabbanan made a takana that with Misa Sabal, the Yorshim will pay the ksuba, and this has nothing to do with inhibiting him. This has nothing to do with a financial responsibility and a penalty or payment that's within the framework of marriage. It has nothing to do with that. It means that a woman has rights to collect money when the marriage terminates, even if the termination of the marriage was bidei shamayim, was Misa. Here, the Bryce has to come up with a brand new halacha. And that's called Yotza Kesef Knosa B'Ksubasa. Meaning that since the Rabbanon did not feel compelled in this case to establish Ksuba for Gerushin, like we said before, because he's paying the Knas, they didn't establish the Ksuba even for Misa. And now what we're saying is that as far as the marriage relationship is concerned, that the Rabbanon made a takana that she should be financially secure and rewarded when this marriage comes to a termination, well, that we could say she got the financial benefit of the knas. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Yeshla Knas Mona. It makes sense that this marriage should terminate with some sort of a payment of the ksuba. The fact that he paid a knas, that doesn't in any way replace the ksuba. The ksuba is for the termination of a marriage relationship. Here, in the case of Onus, certainly he had a marriage relationship. Let him pay the ksuba. The only question is, does he pay Ksuba's mona or Messiah? And the answer is that since he married her, she was already a Ba'ula, and notwithstanding the fact that he himself made her into a Ba'ula, that's enough. That's enough to be poter him, to reduce and diminish the level of the Ksuba from Messiah of a Mesula down to mona of a Ba'ula. But my kamifli, the Gemara now wants to analyze the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda, and the Tanakam and the Chacham. Rabbanan Savri, Taima might take the Rabbanan Ksuba. Why the Rabbanan make a Ksuba? And this whole takana giving a woman monetary benefits when the marriage comes to a termination. And again, the assumption here is that Ksuba is the Rabbanan. I mean, the Gemara actually, in the first parak on Daf Yud, quotes a controversy whether Ksuba is Doraisa or Ksuba Derabbanan, but the assumption of Tosfos over there and also in other places is that Ksuba Doraisa, according to that mandate, only applies to a Besula. Here in this case we're talking about a Be'ula. So that's certainly Derabbanan. So what motivated the Chacham to enact the Takon of Ksuba? Kidei Shelo Tehei Kala Be'enov Lotzi, in order to inhibit his action, his behavior, his implementation of a get, to make him inhibited. But v'ha, in the case of Ones, lo matzi mapikla. Now he can't divorce her, because the Torah says, lo yuchal l'shalcha kol yama. So there's no need to inhibit him to divorce his wife when he's not allowed to, and he won't be able to divorce his wife. And therefore, We interpreted the issue here as the case where she initiated the process of gerushin. So again, if we want to discuss ksuba, I mean, she has a right to force the issue of gerushin. But in this gerushin, there's no rhyme or reason to establish any sort of modus vivendi, any sort of mechanics to inhibit him from divorcing his wife. Because he would never take the initiative to divorce his wife, and even if he wanted to, we wouldn't allow him to do so. Again, this is a very fine analysis of the Rabbanon as far as Gerushin is concerned, that if she initiates the get, but keep in mind, the Rabbanon made a takon of ksuba even for the case of Misa. So in the case of Misa, how are you going to apply this principle of Shalotehe Kala B'Einav Lotzia? So you have to assume that once the Rabbanan made a takana of ksuba for the Gerushin case, then they gave rights to the almana as well. Even though she's not a grusha, she's an almana. But they upgraded her status, that's called china, such that she could collect the ksuba. And once they gave her the rights to collect the ksuba, it doesn't matter why she collects the ksuba, when she collects the ksuba, whether it's because of of divorce, or even in the case of Misa Saba. He says here in the footnote, Hainu Kideisha Balem Yinsu Chain Be'einehem V'lo Yimnu Hanoshim Milinase Le'anoshim. Wow, this is a flip side. He's saying that we wanted to motivate women to get married. Usually we say we want to motivate a man to get married, and that's Chinah. But here, we want to motivate her to get married, and therefore we want to guarantee her certain financial benefits within the framework of marriage. So the takana of ksuba in a case of gerushin is motivated by inhibiting him, whereas the takan of ksuba in the case of misa is motivated to is motivated by her situation, meaning not to inhibit her, but on the contrary to overcome her inhibitions to get married, and to realize that at the end of the day she will be rewarded, you know, so to speak, financially stable or secure, and will take care of her. So the Gemara is saying now that the Takanas Ksuba, as far as Gerishin, which is was enacted to inhibit the Baal from divorcing his wife, doesn't apply here in the case of Ones. Hence, we understand why the Rabbanan say that in the case of Ones, if she initiates the divorce, she will not collect the Ksuba. They never established the Ksuba. What about the case of Misa? So there we have another principle of Yotza Kesef Knasa B'Ksubasa, that this woman is considered, so to speak, financially secure because she already gained a knas, which is a hefty sum of money, and therefore the Rabbanan are not going to, or again, alternatively, maybe you could say in the case of Misa, that once the Rabbanan did not enact the ksuba for a grusha, which was the main primary motivation of the takanas ksuba, then they didn't set up an independent takanas ksuba for the case of an almana, for the case of Misa Saba. Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda Savar, he disagrees. Again, you should be Mesakin Ksuba, and there is a Chashash of Shevetia Kala Ve'inov Lotzia, and that should apply even in the case of an Ones which is Ein V'yodav L'Garisha, but Hanami Mitzarela Adi Omra Hi Lo Be'ina Loch. The Rabbanan are worried about the following. If he wants to divorce her, and even though he's not allowed to technically, but he's allowed to only if she takes the initiative and she asks for a bill of divorce, he virtually has control over that, because if he wants to get out of this marriage, all he has to do is behave in a very, very unethical way and cause her a certain level of anguish until finally she says, oh, I can't take it anymore. She collapses and she wants to get. So we have to inhibit him by saying that you should know, says Rabbi Yossi, that if you end up divorcing your wife, you're going to have to pay the ksuba. Could be the chachamim are not worried about a case of mitzayrlo, you know, that unethical, we don't think he'll be. You know, if he just can write a divorce in a normal case, not in the case of onus, and just, you know, drop it off in her chatzer or chat kolsa, then that's a very easy thing to do, and we have to inhibit that, and we have to misak in the ksuba. But in the case of onus, we cannot take the initiative to divorce her. So you're saying, oh, we have to worry that he'll cause her such anguish and suffering that she'll beg for the divorce, and we want to inhibit him from that situation. So that says the chachamim that's already going too far. Okay, now let's go back to the Mishnah that establishes the differences between Ones and Mefata. And this is with regard to the absolute unconditional obligation incumbent upon the Ones to marry his wife. And the Mishnah says, Ones shose ba'atzitzo, that he's obligated to marry this woman no matter what, no matter how she looks, or it's an absolute requirement. Even if he doesn't want to marry her, it's the last woman in the world he wants to marry. He's boxed himself into a situation where no matter how bad the situation is as far as this woman is concerned, he must marry her. As opposed to the case of Mefata, where he's in a situation of voluntary marriage. He could decide that he doesn't want to marry her, and therefore he's not going to be Shose Be'atzitzo. Amalei Rava Mi Parzeka L'Rav. I don't think this is the Rava that we're usually familiar with. This is a different Rava, probably a little bit of an earlier generation, because he's talking to Rav. I mean, Rav is almost a Tana.
Right.
Okay. Now, wait a second. Before we embark on this discussion about Gzeirah Shavah between Ones and Mefata, and to what extent is that the scope of that Gzeirah Shavah apply, I just want to mention here Akasha from the Shittim Gubetzes. Now, the Chachamim of Rabbi Yossi assume that the payment of the knas is some sort of a substitute or a replacement for the ksuba. But yet the Gemara says that the Chachamim did not establish the takonis ksuba in this case of Ones, because of his absolute unconditional obligation to marry her, and not only that, to remain within that marriage, and he doesn't have the option of divorcing her. So why would the Rabbanan institute ksuba and inhibit him and have a desire to inhibit him from divorcing his wife? But it comes out that the Gemara clearly states that according to Rabbanan there was never a takonis ksuba in this case. So why did
in the case of Ones.
So why did the Gemara have to say, the Brice have to say, that the reason for the Chacham is because Yatza Kesef Knasa B'Ksubasa, that the Knas is a payment, a replacement for the Ksuba? There was never a Takonis Ksuba. Very sharp question of the Shittim Gubetzes. So he answers that the Chacham made a Takonis Ksuba even for a case of a Ba'ula. And although on a deraisa level the takanas ksuba only applies to a besula, according to that mind the Omer, but not in the case of Bula, the Rabbanan nevertheless made a takanas ksuba in the case of Bula. And why? Kidei shalote isha below ksuba, that she shouldn't be stuck without a ksuba. So again, according to Torah law, there's no ksuba in the case of a Bula. And of course, in the case of the Torah law, he could give her a ksuba that he could pay up the ksuba that's biyada, and that applies even to ba'ula because of the Rabbanan's takana. Oh. Now the Chachamim said the following: that a man should not avail himself of his rights on a Torah level to divorce his wife, but rather they wanted his nechasim to be a backup, a security, as achrayus, what we call a shibud nechasim, for the ksuba. And that's going to inhibit him from divorcing his wife. But that's not the real tam of ksuba. In other words, the extra addition here of shalote kalav yenov lotzia is only a secondary reason. And basically, at the time that he pays up the ksuba, let's say, for example, a man marries a woman and he pays up the ksuba at the time of the marriage, and again, he didn't have to do so, but he took the initiative to do so, then that would already pater him from the ksuba. So we're not going to mishabed his nechasim if he already paid the ksuba. So the Gemara wants to come up with a svara here, that in this case of Ones, insofar as he pays the knas right up front, miyad, then he's already like paid up the ksuba b'shas nesu'in. But the Tanakhama says that that's enough, even on a Drabbana level, because the reason why the Rabbanan established the ksuba is to make sure that he has this chov. And in the language of the Shittim Gubetzes, he says, Hatam shetiknu chachomim shaksuba tia olav chov v'lo yanichena biyada mishum shalotehe kala v'enav lo tzia. So the Rabbanan have vested interest that there should be a chov, you know, some sort of outstanding loan, that sort of an albatross, something that hangs over his head, so that he won't flippantly decide, oh, I'm going to divorce my wife. But Khan, Li'olam lote kala enav lotzia, because he doesn't have the ability in the case of Ones to divorce her. And therefore there's no real chashash. So as far as as far as this a concept of Mesa Baal, right, which we said is Yatza Kesef Knosa Biksubasa, then it would seem that the payment of the Knas is a replacement for the payment, the obligation to pay the Ksuba. And we're not going to apply the principle of Shalote Kala Bi'enov Lo Tzia Kan. Here in this case, the Gemara tells us that they didn't make a takon of ksuba, because in any event he's not able to divorce his wife, so we don't have to inhibit him. But since min haTorah, a woman doesn't collect her ksuba unless she's a besula, and the Chacham are the ones who masakein a ksuba even for be'ula in order to inhibit him from divorcing his wife. So the takana was shelo tehe isha below ksuba, that she should be holding on to the ksuba as a chov, that again that's hovering over his head during the entire course of the marriage. And therefore, according to the Torah law, although he could pay her ksuba immediately, right? He can do so. And again, let's assume that applies even in case of ba'ula. Even though ba'ula is the takanas chachamim, but the takanas chachamim is mirrored after the din d'oraisa, which means that he could pay up the ksuba. But the chachamim didn't want that to happen. Again, the Torah would allow it. And presumably, even in the case of ksuba the Rabbanon, like in the case of ba'ula, the Rabbanon would allow it. A man wants to pay up this ksuba up front, in advance, at the time of the marriage, he's allowed to do so. But the Rabbanon were not happy with that, because they want to build in a shibud and a chov to the marriage itself. They want this chov of the ksuba, that she should hold on to the ksuba as a threat, as an inhibiting factor, that he shouldn't divorce his wife. Oh, so he says the following, that if the Rabbanon are interested in creating a situation which will inhibit him from divorcing her, then what they're going to do is they are going to try to make sure that the ksuba is hovering over his head as a shibud, as a chov, and that would inhibit him. But the main point of the ksuba is to assume that he has a payment. And technically, as we said before, both on a deraisa level and a derabbanan, he could exercise his rights to pay this up front, from the beginning of the marriage itself. If that be the case, then the knas, according to the Chachamim, is going to replace the ksuba. You know, you're not going to be able to say, well, you know what? The takon of the Rabbanan doesn't apply here in ksuba. Why? Because there's no point to inhibiting him to divorce his wife. He cannot do so in any event. No, but there's a different aspect of the ksuba, and that is the fact that that the Torah itself establishes a ksuba, and the Rabbanan, in the case of a ba'ula, established a ksuba like the Torah law. And therefore, theoretically, he has rights to pay up the ksuba even at the time of the marriage, up front. How he's going to do so in the case of ones? By paying up the knas. So the knas itself becomes a replacement for the ksuba. So let's get back to Rav Miparzakia, who says to Rav Michti, Migmar Gmiri Me'adodi. We have a gzeres shava that equates ones and mefata. In fact, we learn two different halachas in both directions from ones and mefata. Because in the parasha of Ones, it says Chamishim Kesef, but it doesn't tell you which coin, which matbea. In the case of Mefuta, it doesn't say Chamishim, but it says Yishkol, which means Shkolim. So we derive Shkolim in Ones from Mefata. We derive Chamishim in Mefata from Ones. So now it makes sense that we should go one step further. And that's his kasha here, on Daf Mem Amud Aleph. If this be the case, let's apply the Gzeres Shava L'Ha Milsa Nami Ligmar Me'adodi. Why don't we say the same thing in the case of the Chiyuv to marry her, and that Chiyuv is with or without his agreement. And in Ones, the Torah says, V'lo Siyah L'Isha, he has to marry her. So maybe we should derive, therefore, in Mefata, that he has to marry her. Now, the Gemara thinks that the Gzeres Shava that equates onus of mafat is not limited to the nature of the knas, but it's limited to, it extends even to include the marriage aspect. And just like in onus, the marriage aspect is obligatory, let's assume, by virtue of the sker shavah, that in the case of mafuta, the marriage is obligatory. Therefore we need a special pasuk. Mahar yimarenu lo leisha. And we darshan, what does that mean? Mahar yimarenu lo leisha. Lo midaito. This pasuk appears in the parasha of Mefata. And we're assuming yimarenu lo leisha means that he should decide to marry her and give her a due dowry, right? And midaito means that it doesn't, that it's not forced upon him. There's no kfiyah, but rather it depends upon his ratzon, on his das, if he wants or he doesn't want. That's called midaito. But again, it's very fascinating because in the absence of the pasuk of yimarenu lo, which means midaito, then we would have said that let's derive mafata from ones through the sekser shava and establish that he has to marry her in the case of mafata, whether he likes it or not. Now, what is this drasha here of lo mar yimrenu lo midaito? So the Ritva says the following, that the drasha is really not from the word lo, but rather it's from the word yimharena, because that's another word for konsa, for marrying her. And in the case of onus, it says velo siya leisha, and we don't say lo means midaito. So you see that the word lo is not relevant to have discussion as to whether he decides on his own to marry or whether he's compelled according to the mitzvah satorah to marry. So in other words, the word lo would not be sufficient to establish that lo midaito, that you need his approval. Because even in the case of onus, when we know that we don't need his approval, the Torah says lo siya leisha. So the Ritva adds another point. He says, kevan shemashakosav velo nosav alakosav achrav tiye. So when it says velo, it says tiye. Vainu shehi akava, she's in the driver's seat. Because tiye, we said that she decides whether she wants to marry her. So in other words, when it says in the parasha of Onis velo siya, the velo clearly means against his will, because the word vesiya means that she is in the driver's seat, she decides whether or not they'll get married. But in Mefata, the Torah says mar yimrenu lo leisha. So it doesn't say tiya, and implies that she has she's not the final decisor. She doesn't make the final decision, but rather in the case of Mefata, he'll decide whether he wants to marry her. So we're not going to bludgeon him and force him to marry her. So just to summarize, the Ritva learns that this drush is based on Mar Yimarenu Lo Leisha Lo Midaito, because here, in this context, there's no mention of Hadas. Ketzad Shose Abatzitzo Amar Rav Kahana Amrisa Lishmaitita Kame Derav Zvid Minarda. So when I presented this Mishnah in front of Rav Zvid, and I asked him this question, that it seems from the Mishnah that even if she's not Ru'uya Lavo Bi Yisrael, he's allowed to divorce her. So what is this case that Shoseh Basiso, but Nimtzeh Ba'ah, I'm sorry, it says the following. Let's go back to the Mishnah for a minute. The Mishnah says the following. Ketzad Shoseh Basiso, and then at the end of the Mishnah, it says, Nimtzeh Ba'dvar Erva, O She'ena Re'uya Lavo B'Yisrael. And then we're going to force him to divorce him. So now we're trying to figure out, what does this mean, O She'ena Re'uya Lavo B'Yisrael? What's the case? In other words, you're going to tell me, for example, she's a mamzeres. Okay, so it's an isa lav. But on the other hand, the mitzvah is velo siya leisha. So you tell me it's ain't a ruya lava b'Yisrael. and we're going to force him to divorce her. But why? I mean, after all, the Torah says, "V'lo si'al ish," that's a mitzvah say. Frekta Gemara, this Rav Kahana's question to Rav Zvid, Nesei asei v'nitcha los asei. Why isn't the essay of Alosi Elisha override the Isser of Mamzeres, of Isurei Kol? So why are we forcing him to divorce her? What about essay Dochalosas? So this is a very, very famous sugi here of essay Dochalosas. Now, it's a little bit strange here that the Gemara's Ahava mean of Esei Docha Lo Sasa, because Lo Siel Isha by definition means Isha Re'uyalo. And we had a whole discussion about this back at the beginning of our Perek. So what do you, in Isha Shein Re'uyalo, there's no mitzvah to marry her. So what are you telling me, Esei Docha Lo Sasa? The whole premise that underlies this kash, the Gemara, makes no sense. So Tosus answers, this is Dira Maskel Nesei, this long Tosus here on the top of Daf Mem, that the Mishnah, when it darshins velosia, that those are the extra words. The Gemara is asking, why not darshin the pasuk in a different way and say that the pasuk is only coming to exclude a case of chayve krisus? Then is no mitzvah. But in the case of chayve lavim, like mamzeres, then yovo esei v'yitchalosase. Why not apply the principle of esei dochalosase? So again, when the Mishnah says v'lo si'al isha, and it means isha ru'uyala, that drush is coming to exclude chayve krisus. And in chayve krisus, we certainly are not going to apply the principle of esei dochalosas. But if on the other hand, we're talking about chayve lavin, well, that's the classic formulation of esei dochalosas, which is going to derive from mila b'tzarah. So why not say that if she turns out to be a mamzeres, is nevertheless he should marry her and fulfill the mitzvah of a lo si'al isha? Now I'm assuming that this question of the Gemara would only apply if you hold that kiddushin tosim b'chayvi lavin. If you hold like Rabbi Akiva ain't kiddushin tosim b'chayvi lavin, then it's no different than chayvi krisus. Amar li, so this is Rav Zvid's answer. Hey Chamrina, where do we say neisei esei v'nitchei losa said that's only kigon mila v'tzaras the lo efshel l'kiyum eli esei? Amal hacha, here you can have your cake and eat it too. In other words, you don't have to fulfill the essay, and you avoid violating the law. I amra de lo bi'ina, mi isa le essay klal. In other words, she has the right to veto the marriage. So what kind of essay dochalosas is this? Essay dochalosas means there's no way that you can fulfill the essay without violating the law. Like tzitzas baheres, right? If in the Mokum Arla, in the Mokum Mila, he has tzaras, and the Torah says, Yishomer benega tzaras, lishmar mi'od, and the Chazal of the Sethemach is derived from this pasuk in Azorah for kotzeitz baharto, and it's in the Mokum Mila. So there's no way you can achieve the mitzvah of Mila without being dochal the law of Yishomer lecha, etc. So therefore, we apply the principle of essay dochalosas. That's called lo efshel kiyumei essay. There's no way of fulfilling the essay without violating the law. So the essay overrides the law, and we say essay dochalosas. But here in our case, with the essay of ones that he has to marry his anusa, that's not a definite. That's not an absolute. If she decides that she doesn't want to marry him, then the essay doesn't apply, and therefore there won't be any violation of a lone suspect. All right, so we'll make a note here that we got up to the Mishnah, and in Mirtz Hashem tomorrow, we'll pick it up from the Mishnah.